Chapter 2. Rudian. High in the city of Rudian, Randall Thor looked out from a tall window. Whatever glass might have once been in it was long since gone. The shadows below slanted sharply east. A bard harp played softly in the room behind him. Sweat evaporated from his face almost as soon as it appeared. His red silk coat, damp between the shoulders, hung open in a fruitless bid for air, and his shirt was unlaced half down his chest. Night in the Aiel Waste would bring freezing cold, but during daylight even a breeze was never cool. With his hands above his head on the smooth stone window frame, his coat sleeves fell down to reveal the front part of the figure wrapped around each forearm. A golden-maned serpentine creature, with eyes like the sun, scaled in scarlet and gold, each foot tipped with 5 golden claws. Part of his skin, they were, not tattoos. They glittered like precious metals and polished gems, seemed almost alive in the late afternoon sun. Those marked him, to the people on this side of the mountain range, variously called the Dragon Wall or the Spine of the World, as He Who Comes with the Dawn. And like the herons branded into his palms, they marked him for those beyond the Dragon Wall, too, according to the prophecies, as the Dragon Reborn. In both cases, prophesied to unite, save, and destroy. They were names he would have avoided if he could, but that time was long past, if it had ever existed, and he no longer thought of it, or if he did, on rare occasion, it was with the faint regret of a man recalling a foolish dream of his boyhood. As if he were not close enough to boyhood to remember every minute. Instead, he tried to think only of what he had to do. Fate and duty held him on the path like a rider's reins, but he had often been called stubborn. The end of the road must be reached, but if it could be attained by a different way, maybe it need not be the end. Small chance. No chance, almost certainly. The prophecies demanded his blood. Rudian stretched below him, seared by a sun still pitiless as it sank toward craggy mountains, bleak, with barely a sign of vegetation. This rugged, broken land, where men had killed or died over a pool of water they could step across, was the last place on earth anyone would think to find a great city. Its long-ago builders had never finished their work. Impossibly tall buildings dotted the city, stepped and slab-sided palaces that sometimes ended after 8 or even 10 stories, not with a roof, but with the ragged masonry of another half-built floor. The towers soared higher yet, but stopped in jagged abruptness as often as not. Now a good quarter of the great structures, with their massive columns and immense windows of colored glass, lay strewn as rubble across wide avenues with broad strips of bare dirt down their centers. Dirt that had never held the trees they were planned for. The marvelous fountains stood dry as they had for hundreds upon hundreds of years. All that futile labor, the builders finally dying with their work undone. Yet at times Rand thought that maybe the city had only been begun so he could find it. Too proud, he thought. A man would have to be half mad at least to be so proud. He could not help chuckling dryly. There had been Aes Sedai with the men and women who had come here so long ago, and they had known the Kariathon cycle, the prophecies of the dragon. Or perhaps they had written the prophecies. Too proud by tenfold. Directly below him lay a vast plaza, half covered in stretching shadow, littered with a jumble of statues and crystal chairs, oddities and peculiar shapes of metal or glass or stone, things he could put no name to, scattered about in tangled heaps as if deposited by a storm. Even the shadows were cool only by comparison. Rough-clothed men, not Aiel, sweated to load wagons with items chosen by a short, slender woman in pristine blue silk, straight-backed and gliding from place to place, as though the heat did not press down on her as hard as on the others. Still, she wore a damp white cloth tied around her temples. She just did not let herself show the effects of the sun. Rand would have wagered she did not even perspire. The workmen's leader was a dark, bulky man named Adnan Kadir. A supposed merchant dressed all in cream-colored silk that was sweat-sodden today. He mopped his face continually with a large handkerchief, shouting curses at the men, his wagon drivers and guards. But he leaped as quickly as they to haul at whatever the slim woman pointed out, big or small. Aes Sedai had no need of size to impose their will, but Rand thought that Moraine would have done as well if she had never been near the White Tower. Two of the men were trying to move what appeared to be an oddly twisted redstone door frame. The corners did not meet properly, and the eye did not want to follow the straight pieces. It stayed upright, turning freely but refusing to tip over, however they manhandled it. Then one slipped and fell, through the doorway, up to his waist. Rand tensed. For a moment the fellow seemed not to exist above the waist, his legs kicking wildly in panic. Until Lan, a tall man in drab shades of green, strode over and hauled him out again by his belt. Lan was Moraine's warder, bonded to her in some way Rand did not understand, and a hard man who moved like the Aiel, like a hunting wolf. The sword at his hip did not seem part of him, it was part of him. He dropped the workman on the paving stones and the seat of his breeches and left him there. The fellow's terrified cries rose thinly to Rand, and his companion looked ready to run. Several of Kadir's men, who had been close enough to see, were looking at one another and at the mountains around the city, plainly assessing their chances. Moraine appeared among them so quickly it seemed by the power, moving smoothly from man to man. Her manner made Rand almost hear the cool, imperious instructions coming from her lips, so full of certainty that they would be obeyed that not obeying would seem foolish. In short order, she overrode resistance, stamped firmly on objections, chivied them every one back to work. The pair with the door frame were soon dragging and shoving as hard as ever, if with frequent looks at Moraine, when they thought she would not see. In her own way, she was even harder than Lan. As far as Rand knew, all of those things down there were Angrial, or Sa-Angrial, or Tir-Angrial, made before the breaking of the world to magnify the one power, or use it in various ways. Made with the power, certainly, though not even Aes Sedai knew how to construct such things now. He more than suspected the use of the twisted doorframe, a doorway to another world, but for the rest, he had no idea. No one did. That was why Moraine worked so hard, to have as many as she could carted to the tower for study. It was possible that even the tower did not contain as many objects of the power as lay about this square, though supposedly the tower held the largest collection in the world. Even there, the tower only knew the uses of some. What was in the wagons or tossed about on the pavement did not interest Rand. He had already taken what he needed from down there. Had already taken more than he wanted, in some ways. In the center of the plaza, near the burned remains of a great tree 100 feet high, stood a small forest of tall glass columns, each nearly as tall as the tree, and so slender it seemed the first storm wind must bring them all crashing down. Even with an edge of shadow touching them, the columns caught and refracted the sunlight in glitters and sparkles. For countless years, Aiel men had entered that array and returned marked as Rand was, but on only one arm, marked as clan chiefs. They came out marked, or did not come out. Aiel women had come to this city as well, on the path toward becoming wise ones. No one else, not and live. A man may go to Rudion once, a woman twice. More means death. That was what the wise ones had said, and it had been truth then. Now, anyone could enter Rudion. Hundreds of Aiel walked the streets, and increasing numbers actually dwelled in the buildings. Each day, more of the dirt strips down the streets showed beans or squash or zamai, arduously watered from clay pots hauled from the huge new lake that filled the south end of the valley, the only such body of water in the entire land. Thousands made their camps in the surrounding mountains, even on Cheyendare itself, where before they had come only with ceremony to send a single man or woman at a time into Rudion. Wherever he went, Rand brought change and destruction. This time, he hoped against hope that the change was for the good. It might yet be so. The burned tree mocked him. Avan de Sora, the legendary tree of life. The stories never said where it was, and it had been a surprise to find it here. Moraine said it still lived, that it would put out shoots again, but so far he saw only blackened bark and bare branches. With a sigh, he turned from the window into a big room, though not the biggest in Rudion, with tall windows on two sides, its domed ceiling worked in a fanciful mosaic of winged people and animals. Most of the furniture left in the city had long since rotted away, even in the dryness, and much of the little that remained was riddled with beetles and worms. But on the far side of the room stood one high-backed chair, solid, and its gilding largely intact, but mismatched with its table, a wide thing with legs and edges thickly carved in flowers. Someone had polished the wood with beeswax till it shone dully despite its age. The Aiel had found them for him, though they shook their heads at such things. There were few trees in the waste that could have produced wood straight and long enough to make that chair, and none to make the table. That was all the furniture, as he thought of it. A fine silk Ilioner carpet in blue and gold, booty in some long-ago battle, covered the middle of the dark red floor tiles. Cushions lay scattered about in bright silks and tasseled. Those were what Aiel used instead of chairs, when they did not merely sit on their heels, as comfortable as he would be in a padded chair. Six men reclined against cushions on the carpet, six clan chiefs representing the clans that had so far come to follow Rand. Or rather, to follow he who comes with the dawn, not always eagerly. He thought Ruark, a broad-shouldered, blue-eyed man with heavy streaks of gray in his dark red hair, might have some friendship for him, but not the rest. Only 6 of the 12. Ignoring the chair, Rand sat down cross-legged, facing the Aiel. Outside of Rudion, the only chairs in the waste were chief's chairs, used only by the chief, and only for 3 reasons. To be acclaimed as clan chief, to accept the submission of an enemy with honor, or to pass judgment. Taking the chair with these men now would imply that he meant to do one of those. They wore the cadensor, coats and breeches in shades of brown and gray that would fade into the ground, and soft boots that laced to the knee. Even here, meeting with the man they had proclaimed the Ka'akarn, the chief of chiefs, each had a heavy-bladed knife at his belt, and the gray-brown shufa wrapped like a wide scarf around his neck. If any man covered his face with the black veil that was part of the shufa, he would be ready to kill. It was not beyond possibility. These men had fought one another in a never-ending cycle of clan raids and battles and feuds. They watched him, waited for him, but an Aiel's waiting always spoke of a readiness to move, suddenly and violently. Bale, the tallest man Rand had ever seen, and Geron, blade-slender and whip-quick, lay as far from one another as they could manage and still be on the carpet. There was blood feud between Bale's Goshin and Geron's Sharad, suppressed for he who comes with the dawn, but not forgotten. And perhaps the peace of Rudion still held, despite all that had happened. Still, the tranquil sounds of the harp made a sharp contrast with the hard refusal of Bale and Geron to look at one another. 6 sets of eyes, blue or gray or green, in sun-dark faces. Aiel could make hawks look tame. "What must I do to bring the rain to me?" he said. "You were sure they would come, Ruark?" The chief of the Tardad looked at him calmly. His face could have been carved stone for all its expression.
Wait. Only wait. Derek will bring them, eventually.
White-haired Han, lying next to Ruark, twisted his mouth as if about to spit. His leathery face wore a sour look, as usual.
Derek has seen too many men and maidens sit staring for days, then throw down their spears. Throw them down!
And run away,
Bale added quietly.
I have seen them myself, among the Goshin, even from my own sept, running. And you, Han, among the Tomonel. We all have. I do not think they know where they are running to, only what they are running from.
Cowardly snakes,
Geron barked. Gray-streaked his light brown hair. There were no young men among Aiel clan chiefs.
Stink adders, wriggling away from their own shadows.
A slight shift of his blue eyes toward the far side of the carpet made it clear he meant it for a description of the Goshin, not just those who had thrown down their spears. Bale made as if to rise, his face hardening further, if that was possible, but the man next to him put a quieting hand on his arm.
Braun, of the Nakai, was big enough and strong enough for two blacksmiths. But he had a placid nature that seemed odd for an Aiel.
All of us have seen men and maidens run.
He sounded almost lazy, and his gray eyes looked so, yet Rand knew otherwise. Even Ruark considered Bruan a deadly fighter and a devious tactician. Luckily, not even Ruark was stronger for Rand than Bruan. But he had come to follow He Who Comes with the Dawn. He did not know Randall Thor.
As you have, Geron. You know how hard it was to face what they face. If you cannot name coward those who died because they could not face it, can you name coward those who run for the same reason?
They should never have learned,
Han muttered, kneading his red-tasseled blue cushion like an enemy's throat.
It was for those who could enter Roydian and live.
He spoke the words to no one in particular, but they had to be for Rand's ears. It was Rand who had revealed to everyone what a man learned amid the glass columns in the plaza. Revealed enough that the chiefs and wise ones could not turn aside when asked the rest. If there was an Aiel in the waste who did not know the truth now, he had not spoken to anyone in a month. Far from the glorious heritage of battle most believed in, the Aiel had begun as helpless refugees from the breaking of the world. Everyone who survived had been refugees then, of course, but the Aiel had never seen themselves as helpless. Worse, they had been followers of the Way of the Leaf, refusing to do violence even in defense of their lives. Aiel meant dedicated in the old tongue, and it had been to peace that they were dedicated. Those who called themselves Aiel today were the descendants of those who had broken a pledge of untold generations. Only one remnant of that belief remained. An Aiel would die before taking up a sword. They had always believed it a part of their pride, of their separateness from those who lived outside the waste. He had heard Aiel say that they had committed some sin to be placed in the desolate waste. Now they knew what it was. The men and women who had built Roydian and died here, those called the Gen Aiel, the clan that was not, on the few occasions they were spoken of, had been the ones who kept faith with the Aes Sedai of the time before the breaking. It was hard to face the knowledge that what you had always believed was a lie.
It had to be told, Rand said. They had a right to know. A man shouldn't have to live a lie. Their own prophecy said I would break them, and I couldn't have done differently.
The past was past and done. He should be worrying about the future.
Some of these men dislike me, and some hate me for not being born among them. But they follow. I need them all.
What are the Miagoma?
Irim, lying between Rourke and Han, shook his head. His once bright red hair was half white, but his green eyes were as strong as any younger man's. His big hands, wide and long and hard, said his arms were as strong, too.
Timurlin does not let his feet know which way he will jump until after he has leaped.
When Timurlin was young as a chief, Geron said, he tried to unite the clans and failed. It will not sit well with him that at last one has come to succeed where he failed.
He will come, Rourke said. Timurlin never believed himself he who comes with the dawn.
And Jonwin will bring the Shianda.
But they will wait. They must settle matters in their own minds first.
They must settle he who comes with the dawn, being a wetlander, Han barked. I mean no offense, Ka'akarn.
There was no obsequiousness in his voice. A chief was not a king, and neither was the chief of chiefs. At best, he was first among equals.
The Dirain and the Kodara will come eventually as well, I think, Bruan said calmly.
And quickly, lest silence should grow to a reason for dancing the spears. First among equals, at best.
They have lost more than any other clans to the bleakness.
That was what the Aiel had taken to calling the long period of staring before someone tried to run away from being Aiel.
For the moment, Mandalayne and Indirian are concerned with holding their clans together, and both will want to see the dragons on your arms for themselves. But they will come.
That left only one clan to be discussed, the one none of the chiefs wanted to mention.
What news of Culloden and the Shido? Rand asked.
Silence answered him, broken only by the softly serene sounds of the harp in the background. Each man waiting for another to speak, all coming as close as Aiel could, to showing discomfort. Geron frowned at his thumbnail, and Bruan toyed with one of the silvery tassels on his green cushion. Even Ruark studied the carpet. Graceful, white-robed men and women moved into the hush, pouring worked silver goblets of wine to set beside each man, bringing small silver plates with olives, rare in the waste, and white ewe's milk cheese, and the pale, wrinkled nuts the Aiel called pecara. The Aiel faces looking out of those pale cowls had downcast eyes and an unfamiliar meekness on their features. Whether captured in battle or on a raid, the Gaishain were sworn to serve obediently for 1 year and a day, touching no weapon, doing no violence, at the end returning to their own clan and sept as if nothing had happened. A strange echo of the Way of the Leaf. Jiato, honor and obligation, required it, and breaking Jiato was nearly the worst thing an Aiel could do. Perhaps the worst. It was possible that some of these men and women were serving their own clan chief, but neither would acknowledge it by the blink of an eye so long as the period of Gaishain held, not even for a son or daughter. It struck Rand suddenly that this was the real reason that Samael took what he had revealed so hard. To those it must seem that their ancestors had sworn Gaishain, not only for themselves but for all succeeding generations. And those generations, all down to the present day, had broken Jiato by taking up the spear. Had the men in front of him ever worried along those lines? Jiato was very serious business to an Aiel. The Gaishain departed on soft-slippered feet, barely making a sound. None of the clan chiefs touched their wine or the food.
"Is there any hope that Culloden will meet with me?"
Rand knew there was not. He had stopped sending requests for a meeting once he learned Culloden was having the messengers skinned alive. But it was a way to start the others talking. Han snorted.
"The only word we have from him is that he means to flay you when next he sees you. Does that sound as if he will talk?"
"Can I break the Shido away from him?" "They follow him," Ruark said. "He is not a chief at all, but they believe he is."
Culloden had never entered those glass columns. He might even still believe, as he claimed, that everything Rand had said was a lie.
He says that he is the Kaa Karn, and they believe that as well. The Shido maidens who came for their society, and that because Fardar Mai carried your honor. No one else will.
We send scouts to watch them, Bruan said, and the Shido kill them when they can. Culloden builds the makings of half a dozen feuds, but so far he shows no signs of attacking us here. I have heard that he claims we have defiled Rudion, and that attacking us here would only deepen the desecration.
Erem grunted and shifted on his cushion.
He means there are enough spears here to kill every Shido twice over and to spare.
He popped a piece of white cheese into his mouth, growling around it.
The Shido are ever cowards and thieves.
Honorless dogs, Bale and Jaron said together, then stared at one another as though each thought the other had tricked him into something.
Honorless or not, Bruan said quietly, Culloden's numbers are growing.
Calm as he sounded, he still took a deep drink from his goblet before going on.
You all know what I am speaking of. Some of those who run after the bleakness do not throw away their spears. Instead, they join with their societies among the Shido.
No Tomanel has ever broken clan, Han barked.
Bruan looked past Ruark and Erim at the Tomanel chief and said deliberately,
It has happened in every clan.
Without waiting for another challenge to his word, he settled back on his cushion.
It cannot be called breaking clan. They join their societies, like the Shido maidens who have come to their roof here.
There were a few mutters, but no one disputed him this time. The rules governing Aiel warrior societies were complex, and in some ways their members felt as closely bound to society as to clan. For instance, members of the same society would not fight each other, even if their clans were in blood feud. Some men would not marry a woman too closely related to a member of their own society, just as if that made her their own close blood kin. The ways of Fardar Mai, the maidens of the spear, Rand did not even want to think about.
I need to know what Culloden intends, he told them.
Culloden was a bull with a bee in his ear. He might charge in any direction. Rand hesitated. Would it violate honor to send people to join their societies among the Shido? He did not need to describe what he meant any further. To a man, they stiffened where they lay, even Ruark, eyes cold enough to banish the heat from the room.
To spy in that manner,
Erem twisted his mouth around spy as if the word tasted foul,
would be like spying on your own sept. No one of honor would do such a thing.
Rand refrained from asking whether they might find someone with a slightly less prickly honor. The Aiel sense of humor was a strange thing, often cruel, but about some matters they had none at all. To change the subject, he asked, Is there any word from across the Dragon Wall? He knew the answer. That sort of news spread quickly, even among as many Aiel as were gathered around Rudion.
None worth the telling, Ruark replied. With the troubles among the tree killers, few peddlers come into the threefold land.
That was the Aiel name for the waste. A punishment for their sin, a testing ground for their courage, an anvil to shape them. Tree killers was what they called Kariennin. The dragon banner still flies over the Stone of Tyr. Tyrans have moved north into Kariennin, as you ordered, to distribute food among the tree killers. Nothing more.
You should have let the tree killers starve, Bale muttered, and Jaron closed his mouth with a snap.
Rand suspected he had been about to say much the same.
Tree killers are fit for nothing except to be killed or sold as animals in Shara,
Erem said grimly. Those were two of the things Aiel did to those who came into the waste uninvited. Only gleemen, peddlers, and tinkers had safe passage, though Aiel avoided the tinkers as if they carried fever. Shara was the name of the lands beyond the waste. Not even the Aiel knew much about them. From the corner of his eye, Rand saw two women standing expectantly just inside the tall arched doorway. Someone had hung strings of colored beads there, red and blue, to replace the missing doors. One of the women was Moraine. For a moment, he considered making them wait. Moraine had that irritatingly commanding look on her face, clearly expecting them to break off everything for her. Only, there was really nothing left to discuss, and he could tell from the men's eyes that they did not want to make conversation. Not so soon after speaking of the bleakness and the Shido. Sighing, he stood, and the clan chiefs imitated him. All except Han were as tall as he, or taller. Where Rand had grown up, Han would have been considered of average height or better. Among Aiel, he was accounted short. "You know what must be done? Bring in the rest of the clans and keep an eye on the Shido." He paused a moment, then added, "It will end well. As well for the Aiel as I can manage."
"The prophecy said you would break us," Han said sourly, "and you have made a good beginning. But we will follow you, till shade is gone," he recited, "till water is gone, into the shadow with teeth bared, screaming defiance with the last breath, to spit in Sightblinder's eye on the last day."
Sightblinder was one of the Aiel names for the Dark One. There was nothing for Rand except to make the proper response. Once he had not known it. "By my honor and the light, my life will be a dagger for Sightblinder's heart." "Until the last day," the Aiel finished, "to Sheol Ghul itself." The harper played on pacifically. The chiefs filed out past the two women, eyeing Moraine respectfully. There was nothing of fear in them. Rand wished he could be as sure of himself. Moraine had too many plans for him, too many ways of pulling strings he did not know she had tied to him. The two women came in as soon as the chiefs were gone, Moraine as cool and elegant as ever. A small, pretty woman, with or without those Aes Sedai features he could never put an age to, she had abandoned the damp, cooling cloth for her temples. In its place, a small blue stone hung suspended on her forehead from a fine golden chain in her dark hair. It would not have mattered if she had kept it. Nothing could diminish her queenly carriage. She usually seemed to own a foot more height than she actually had, and her eyes were all confidence and command. The other woman was taller, though still short of his shoulder, and young, not ageless. Egwene, whom he had grown up with. Now, except for her big dark eyes, she could almost have passed as an Aiel woman, and not only for her tanned face and hands. She wore a full Aiel skirt of brown wool and a loose white blouse of a plant fiber called algoda. Algoda was softer than even the finest woven wool. It would do very well for trade, if he ever convinced the Aiel. A gray shawl hung around Egwene's shoulders, and a folded gray scarf made a wide band to hold back the dark hair that fell below her shoulders. Unlike most Aiel women, she wore only one bracelet, ivory carved into a circle of flames, and a single necklace of gold and ivory beads. And one more thing, a great serpent ring on her left hand. Egwene had been studying with some of the Aiel wise ones. Exactly what, Rand did not know, though he more than suspected something to do with dreams. Egwene and the Aiel women were close-mouthed, but she had studied in the White Tower, too. She was one of the accepted on the way to becoming Aes Sedai, and passing herself off, here and in Tyr at least, as full Aes Sedai already. Sometimes he teased her about that. She did not take his japes very well, though.
"The wagons will be ready to leave for Tarvalen soon," Moraine said. Her voice was musical, crystalline.
"Send a strong guard," Rand said, "or Kadir may not take them where you want." He turned for the windows again, wanting to look out and think about Kadir.
"You've not needed me to hold your hand or give you permission before."
Abruptly, something seemed to strike him across the shoulders, for all the world like a thick hickory stick. Only the slight feel of goosebumps on his skin, not likely in this heat, told him that one of the women had channeled. Spinning back to face them, he reached out to Sidene, filled himself with the one power. The power felt like life itself, swelling inside him, as if he were 10 times, 100 times as alive. The Dark One's taint filled him, too. Death and corruption, like maggots crawling in his mouth. It was a torrent that threatened to sweep him away, a raging flood he had to fight every moment. He was almost used to it now, and at the same time, he would never be used to it. He wanted to hold on to the sweetness of Sidene forever, and he wanted to vomit. And all the while, the deluge tried to scour him to the bone and burn his bones to ash. The taint would drive him mad eventually if the power did not kill him first. It was a race between the two. Madness had been the fate of every man who had channeled since the breaking of the world began, since that day when Luz Theron Telamon, the dragon, and his 100 companions had sealed up the Dark One's prison at Shael Ghul. The last backblast from that ceiling had tainted the male half of the true source, and men who could channel, madmen who could channel, had torn the world apart. He filled himself with the power, and he could not tell which woman had done it. They both looked at him as if butter would not melt in their mouths, each with an eyebrow arched almost identically in slightly amused questioning. Either or both could be embracing the female half of the source right that instant, and he would never know. Of course, a stick across the shoulders was not Moraine's way. She found other means of chastising, more subtly, usually more painful in the end. Yet, even sure that it must have been Egwene, he did nothing. Proof. Thought slid along the outside of the void. He floated within, in emptiness, thought and emotion, even his anger, distant. I will do nothing without proof. I will not be goaded this time. She was not the Egwene he had grown up with. She had become part of the tower since Moraine sent her there. Moraine again. Always Moraine. Sometimes he wished he were rid of Moraine. Only sometimes? He concentrated on her. What do you want of me? His voice sounded flat and cold to his own ears. The power stormed inside him. Egwene had told him that for a woman touching Sidar, the female half of the source, was an embrace. For a man, always, it was a war without mercy. And don't mention wagons again, little sister. I usually find out what you mean to do long after it is done. The Aes Sedai frowned at him, and no wonder. She was surely not used to being addressed so, not by any man, even the dragon reborn. He had no idea himself where little sister had come from. Sometimes of late words seemed to pop into his head. A touch of madness, perhaps. Some nights he lay awake, till the small hours, worrying about that. Inside the void, it seemed someone else's worry.
We should speak alone.
She gave the harper a cool glance. Jason Natale, as he called himself here, lay half sprawled on cushions against one of the windowless walls, softly playing the harp, perched on his knee, its upper arm carved and gilded to resemble the creatures on Rand's forearms. Dragons, the Aiel called them. Rand had only suspicions where Natale had gotten the thing. He was a dark-haired man who would have been accounted taller than most elsewhere than the Aiel waist, in his middle years. His coat and breeches were dark blue silk, suitable for a royal court, elaborately embroidered with thread of gold on collar and cuffs, everything buttoned up or laced despite the heat. The fine clothes were at odds with his gleeman's cloak spread out beside him. A perfectly sound cloak, but covered completely with hundreds of patches and nearly as many colors, all sewn so as to flutter at the slightest breeze. It signified a country entertainer, a juggler and tumbler, musician and storyteller who wandered from village to village. Certainly not a man to wear silk. The man had his conceits. He appeared completely immersed in his music. "You can say what you wish in front of Natale," Rand said. "He is gleeman to the dragon reborn, after all." If keeping the matter secret was important enough, she would press it and he would send Natale away, though he did not like the man to be out of his sight. Egwene sniffed loudly and shifted her shawl on her shoulders.
"Your head is swelled up like an overripe melon, Randall Thor."
She said it flatly as a statement of fact. Anger bubbled outside the void. Not at what she had said. She had been in the habit of trying to take him down a rung, even when they were children, usually whether he deserved it or not. But of late, it seemed to him, she had taken to working with Moraine, trying to put him off balance so the Aes Sedai could push him where she wanted. When they were younger, before they learned what he was, he and Egwene had thought they would marry one day. And now she sided with Moraine against him. Face hard, he spoke more roughly than he intended.
"Tell me what you want, Moraine. Tell me here and now, or let it wait until I can find time for you. I'm very busy."
That was an outright lie. Most of his time was spent practicing the sword with Lan or the spears with Ruark, or learning to fight with hands and feet from both. But if there was any bullying to be done here today, he would do it. Natale could hear anything. Almost anything. So long as Rand knew where he was at all times. Moraine and Egwene both frowned, but the real Aes Sedai at least seemed to see he would not be budged this time. She glanced at Natale, her mouth tightening. The man still seemed deep in his music, then took a thick wad of gray silk from her pouch. Unfolding it, she laid what it had contained on the table, a disc the size of a man's head, half dead black, half purest white, the two colors meeting in a sinuous line to form two joined teardrops. This had been the symbol of Aes Sedai before the breaking, but this disc was more. Only 7 like it had ever been made, the seals in the Dark One's prison. Or rather, each was a focus for one of the seals. Drawing her belt knife, its hilt wrapped in silver wire, Moraine scraped delicately at the edge of the disc, and a tiny flake of solid black fell away. Even encased in the void, Rand gasped. The emptiness itself quivered, and for an instant the power threatened to overwhelm him.
"Is it a copy? A fake?"
"I found this in the square below," Moraine said. "It is real, though. The one I brought with me from Tyr is the same."
She could have been saying she wanted pea soup for the midday meal. Egwene, on the other hand, clutched her shawl around her as if cold. Rand felt the stirrings of fright himself, oozing across the surface of the void. It was an effort to let go of Sidene, but he forced himself. If he lost concentration, the power could destroy him where he stood, and he wanted all his attention on the matter at hand. Even so, even with the taint, it was a loss. That flake lying on the table was impossible. Those discs were made of Quendiar. Heartstone, and nothing made of Quendiar, could be broken. Not even by the one power. Whatever force was used against it only made it stronger. The making of Heartstone had been lost in the breaking of the world, but whatever had been made of it during the Age of Legends still existed. Even the most fragile vase, even if the breaking had sunk it to the bottom of the ocean or buried it beneath a mountain. Of course, 3 of the 7 discs were broken already, but it had taken a good deal more than a knife. Come to think of it, though, he did not know how those 3 really had been broken. If no force short of the Creator could break Heartstone, then that should be that.
"How?"
he asked, surprised that his voice was still as steady as when the void had surrounded him.
"I do not know," Moraine replied, just as calm outwardly. "But you do see the problem. A fall from the table could break this. If the others, wherever they may be, are like this, 4 men with hammers could break open that hole in the Dark One's prison again. Who can even say how effective one is in this condition?"
Rand saw. "I'm not ready yet." He was not sure he ever would be ready, but he surely was not yet. Egwene looked as though she were staring into her own open grave. Rewrapping the disc, Moraine replaced it in her pouch.
Perhaps I will think of a possibility before I carry this to Tarvalin. If we know why, perhaps something can be done about it.
He was caught by the image of the Dark One reaching out from Sheol Ghul once more, eventually breaking free completely. Fires and darkness covered the world in his mind, flames that consumed and gave no light. Blackness, solid as stone, squeezing the air. With that filling his head, what Moraine had just said took a moment to penetrate.
You intend to go yourself?
He had thought she meant to stick to him like moss to a rock.
Isn't this what you want?
Eventually, Moraine replied quietly, eventually I will have to leave you, after all. What will be, must be.
Rand thought she shivered, but it was so quick it could have been his imagination. And the next instant, she was all composure and self-control once more.
You must be ready.
The reminder of his doubts came unpleasantly.
We should discuss your plans. You cannot sit here much longer. Even if the Forsaken are not planning to come after you, they are out there, spreading their power. Gathering the Aiel will do no good if you find that everything beyond the spine of the world is in their hands.
Chuckling, Rand leaned back against the table. So this was just another ploy. If he was anxious about her leaving, perhaps he would be more willing to listen, more amenable to being guided. She could not lie, of course, not right out. One of the vaunted three oaths took care of that, to speak no word that was not true. He had learned that it left a barn width of wriggle room. She would leave him alone eventually, after he was dead, no doubt. You want to discuss my plans? He said dryly. Pulling a short-stemmed pipe and a leather tabak pouch from his coat pocket, he thumbed the bowl full and briefly touched Sidene to channel a flame dancing above the tabak. Why, they are my plans. Puffing slowly, he waited, ignoring Egwene's glower. The Aes Sedai's face never changed, but her large dark eyes seemed to blaze.
What have you done when you refused to be guided by me?
Her voice was as cool as her features, yet the words still seemed to come like whip cracks.
Wherever you have gone, you have left death, destruction, and war behind you.
Not in Tyr, he said too quickly, and too defensively. He must not let her put him off balance. Determinedly, he took spaced, deliberate puffs at his pipe.
No, she agreed, not in Tyr. For once you had a nation behind you, a people, and what did you do with it? Bringing justice to Tyr was commendable. Establishing order in Carrion, feeding the hungry is laudable. Another time I would praise you for it.
She herself was Carrionan.
But it does not help you toward the day you face Tommen Gaiden.
A single-minded woman, and cold when it came to anything else, even her own land. But should he not be just as single-minded? What would you have me do? Hunt down the Forsaken one by one? Again he forced himself to draw more slowly on the pipe. It was an effort. Do you even know where they are? Osamael is in Ilion. You know that. But the rest? What if I go after Samael as you wish and find two or three or four of them? Or all nine?
You could have faced three or four, perhaps all nine surviving, she said icily, had you not left Kalendor in Tyr. The truth is you are running. You do not really have a plan, not a plan to ready you for the last battle. You run from place to place, hoping that in some way everything will come out for the best. Hoping because you do not know what else to do. If you would take my advice, at least you...
He cut her off, gesturing sharply with his pipe, with never a care for the glares the two women gave him. I do have a plan. If they wanted to know, let them know, and he would be burned if he changed a word. First, I mean to put an end to the wars and killing, whether I started them or not.
If men have to kill, let them kill Trollocs, not each other. In the Aiel War, 4 clans crossed the Dragon Wall and had their way for better than 2 years. They looted and burned Kyrian, defeated every army sent against it. They could have taken Tar Valon had they wanted. The tower couldn't have stopped them because of your 3 oaths. Not to use the power as a weapon except against Shadowspawn or Dark Friends or in defense of their own lives. That was another of the oaths. And the Aiel had not threatened the tower itself. Anger had him in its grip now. Running and hoping, was he? 4 clans did that. What will happen when I lead 11 across the spine of the world? It would have to be 11, small hope of bringing in the Shido. By the time the nations even think of uniting, it will be too late. They'll accept my peace, or I'll be buried in the Khan Briat. A discordant plunk rose from the harp, and a tail bent over the instrument, shaking his head. In a moment, the soothing sounds came again.
A melon couldn't be swollen enough for your head, Egwene muttered, folding her arms beneath her breasts. And a stone couldn't be as stubborn. Moraine is only trying to help you. Why won't you see that?
The Aes Sedai smoothed her silk skirts, though they did not need it.
Taking the Aiel across the Dragon Wall might be the worst thing you could possibly do.
There was an edge to her voice, anger or frustration. At least he was getting across to her that he was no puppet.
By this time, the Amaran seat will be approaching the rulers of every nation that still has a ruler, laying the proofs before them that you are the dragon reborn. They know the prophecies. They know what you were born to do. Once they are convinced of who and what you are, they will accept you because they must. The last battle is coming, and you are their only hope. Humankind's only hope.
Rand laughed out loud. It was a bitter laugh. Sticking his pipe between his teeth, he hoisted himself to sit cross-legged atop the table, staring at them.
So you and Swan Sanche still think you know everything there is to know?
The Light willing, they did not know near everything about him, and would never find out.
You're both fools. Show some respect! Egwene growled,
but Rand went on over her words.
The Tyran High Lords know the prophecies too, and they knew me once they saw the sword that cannot be touched clutched in my fist. Half of them expect me to bring them power or glory or both. The other half would as soon slip a knife in my back and try to forget the Dragon Reborn was ever in Tyr. That is how the nations will greet the Dragon Reborn. Unless I quell them first, the same way I did the Tyrans. Do you know why I left Kalendor in Tyr? To remind them of me. Every day they know it is there, driven into the heart of the stone. And they know I'll come back for it. That is what holds them to me.
That was one reason he had left the sword that is not a sword behind. He did not like even to think of the other.
Be very careful,
Moraine said after a moment. Just that, in a voice all frozen calm. He heard stark warning in the words. Once he had heard her say, in much the same tone, that she would see him dead before letting the shadow have him. A hard woman. For a long moment she gazed at him, her eyes dark pools that threatened to swallow him. Then she made a perfect curtsy.
By your leave, my Lord Dragon, I will see to letting Master Kadir know where I expect him to work tomorrow.
No one could have seen or heard the faintest mockery in action or words, but Rand felt it. Anything that might put him off balance, make him more biddable by guilt or shame or uncertainty or whatever, she would try. He stared after her until the clicking beads in the doorway obscured her.
There is no need you scowling like that, Randall Thor.
Egwene's voice was low, her eyes irate. She held onto her shawl as if she wanted to strangle him with it.
Lord Dragon, indeed. Whatever you are, you're a rude, ill-mannered lout. You deserve more than you got. It would not kill you to be civil.
So it was you, he snapped,
but to his surprise, she half shook her head before catching herself. It had been Moraine after all. If the Aes Sedai was showing that much temper, something must be wearing at her terribly. Him, no doubt. Perhaps he should apologize. I suppose it wouldn't hurt to be civil. Though he could not see why he was supposed to be mannerly to the Aes Sedai while she tried to lead him on a leash. But if he was thinking of trying to be polite, Egwene was not. If glowing coals were dark brown, they would have been exactly like her eyes.
You are a wool-headed fool, Randalthor, and I should never have told Elaine you were good enough for her. You aren't good enough for a weasel. Bring your nose down. I remember you sweating, trying to talk your way out of some trouble Matt had gotten you into. I can remember Nynaeve switching you till you howled, and you needing a cushion to sit on the rest of the day. Not that many years gone, either. I ought to tell Elaine to forget you. If she knew half what you've turned into...
He gaped at her as the tirade went on, with her more furious than at any time since first coming through the bead curtain.
Then it hit him. That little near shake of her head that she had not meant to give, letting him know it had been Moiraine who struck him with the power.
Egwene worked very hard at doing what she was about in proper fashion. Studying with the wise ones, she wore Aiel clothes. She might even be trying to adopt Aiel customs for all he knew. It would be like her. But she worked hard at being a proper Aes Sedai all the time, even if she was only one of the accepted. Aes Sedai usually kept a rein on their tempers, but they never ever gave anything away that they wanted to hide.
Ilyena never flashed her temper at me when she was angry with herself. When she gave me the rough side of her tongue, it was because she...
His mind froze for an instant. He had never met a woman named Ilyena in his life, but he could summon up a face for the name dimly. A pretty face, skin like cream, golden hair exactly the shade of Elaine's. This had to be the madness. Remembering an imaginary woman... Perhaps one day he would find himself having conversations with people who were not there. Egwene's harangue shut off with a concerned look.
Are you all right, Rand?
The anger was gone from her voice, as if it had never been.
Is something wrong? Should I fetch Moraine back to...
No, he said, and just as quickly softened his own tone.
She can't heal.
Even an Aes Sedai could not heal madness. None of them could heal any of what ailed him.
Is Elaine well?
She is well.
Despite what Egwene had said, there was a hint of sympathy in her voice. That was all he really expected. Beyond what he had known when Elaine left Tyr, what she was up to was an Aes Sedai concern and none of his. So Egwene had told him more than once, and Moraine echoed her. The three wise ones who could dreamwalk... Those Egwene was studying with had been even less informative. They had their own reasons not to be pleased with him.
I had best to go, too, Egwene went on, settling her shawl over her arms. You are tired.
Frowning slightly, she said,
Rand, what does it mean to be buried in Cambriat?
He started to ask what under the light she was talking about. Then he remembered using that phrase.
Just something I heard once, he lied.
He had no more idea what it meant than where it had come from.
You rest, Rand, she said, sounding 20 years older rather than 2 years younger. Promise me you will. You need it.
He nodded. She studied his face for a moment as though searching for the truth, then started for the door. Rand's silver goblet of wine floated up from the carpet and drifted to him. He hastily snatched it out of the air just before Egwene looked back over her shoulder.
Perhaps I shouldn't tell you this, she said. Elaine didn't give it to me as a message for you, but... She said she loves you. Perhaps you know already, but if you don't, you should think about it.
With that, she was gone, the beads clicking together behind her. Leaping from the table, Rand hurled the goblet away, splashing wine across the floor tiles as he rounded on Jason a tail in a fury.